Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday Wallop here. We're recording on a Wednesday again, Brendan. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice to not scramble and feel hungover from our, Frantic Fridays that we did last week?
Freaking out Fridays because we just realized we were 2 days late with our with our pod here. But as far as it goes, the Jaybird watching is back on pace here. We're getting ready for the sprint, or the regular parts of games to start here just as much as anybody else. The morning mash is in full swing.
Yeah, I was listening to some of the morning mashes this morning at work. They're really well done. I might have to get into that action.
Yeah. You know, it'll save me some days if you want to pick a couple.
Well, when the weather starts getting nicer, I have a 40-minute walk to work, so I can save money and not take the TTC. So maybe when I'm on my walk to work, I'll record a few morning mashes.
There you go, because it's more or less I'm doing it in my commute on my way to work in my car, knowing all the stuff I'm just riffing.
I mean, you'll hear a lot of the Toronto noise and background and everybody walking to work and probably horns honking and people shouting at each other, but hey, I guess it's pretty authentic, I guess, for Toronto.
We're just going to have to get you like some kind of like a Jaybird watching jacket or something that says like, honk at me if you love the Blue Jays.
That's right, and then every single honk, we'll see how many we get at the end of my walk to work.
We'll see if we can get some t-shirts or something to hand out.
Yeah. And the other good thing about being back on Wednesdays, my friend, is if we record again next week Wednesday or even Tuesday, then opening day is right around the corner. It's like a day or two later. So
as of everybody listening to this, it will be exactly 1 week away from Blue Jay baseball.
That's right. We'll only be able to preview a series and talk about the pitching matchups that are scheduled against the Tigers and maybe even touch on the Orioles series. No, it'll be good.
Yeah, and then there's always that wonderful rumor that we actually might have a live show that Sunday. I'm trying to get it going. We'll see what happens.
Let me know if that materializes. The Sunday against the Tigers?
Yes, that started. All right. Fourth game of the season? Yeah.
Yep. All right, well, let me know.
Yeah, that would be like way too much fun if we could get that going again.
Yeah, I enjoyed that last year. It was good.
Yeah, you, me, and Corsair are a horrible group to be talking Blue Jays baseball.
Yeah, especially with a few beers in us.
Which always happens, which is why it makes it more fun for us to listen to us instead of Buck and Pat.
Yeah, 100%, my friend. That's why we do it.
There you go. So anyway, why don't we dive into the wonderful only news that's really going on here, my friend, is John Axford and Ryan Tepera are currently experiencing elbow soreness. There's been really no full-on report other than that. They haven't said that there's going to be DL time or anything, but it does bring up some interesting ideas if they do hit the DL. But one thing is the other, Brendan. Obviously, these are two guys that we're hoping to lean on pretty efficiently probably in this Toronto Blue Jays bullpen.
Yeah, man, it sucks, especially I feel bad for Axford. Coming back again, expresses his desire to stay here. Hopefully, it's just an age thing, just the rigors of getting started back up and throwing a baseball. I mean, remember when he got traded to the Dodgers, I'm pretty sure he only had one outing, and then he got injured. He came back for two more at the end of the season as the Dodgers were pushing towards the playoffs, and then he was left off the playoff roster. So he hasn't pitched a whole lot since the Jays traded him to L.A. last year. So hopefully it's just a minor little flare-up. Tepera, I can totally see being reason for some serious concern because, as we discussed before we hopped on the show, he pitched 77 2/3 innings in 2017, and 64 and two-thirds just last year. So DePera, I think there's a little bit more reason to be concerned about, especially when he's going to be penciled in to likely be setting up Ken Giles alongside Bud Norris. And John Axford could have had a case for the setup role or the seventh inning guy potentially. But yeah, no, it sucks. Those are two big arms that were Montoya was going to lean heavily again on in this bullpen.
Yeah, the Axeman, my guess is like you were alluding to there. It's just the fact that he's just, maybe having a little extra trouble getting it completely stretched out this spring. I think he's going to settle in and it's going to probably be fine. Just needs a, that little step back here. Maybe he went too heavy on it this spring.
But yeah, DePera, I hope so.
To me, this is just like you were saying, the full-on piling up of innings. And then he was sick this spring. We all know that. And it was like kind of like a flu-ish type thing is what I remember hearing. And in the midst of that, it just sounds like maybe when he came back that last outing this past Sunday, maybe he was not fully there and trying to reach back for that little extra and just, gassed it a little bit.
Yeah. You know what, man? He pitched a lot over the last few years, and you could see it towards the end of 2018. If you pull up his splits and compare the first half of 2018 where he had a 2.90 ERA, very, very good, respectable, definitely an ERA that you want from a guy who's setting up to your closer, but his second half was almost 5 ERA. So a lot of innings to pile up for Ryan DePera, and for a guy who's not used to that many innings over the last few years. And as we said before we hopped on, he was looking a little gassed and tired in spring, so hopefully he's not compensating for something by altering his delivery or motion a little bit to get that extra velo back on his fastball. But it'll be interesting to see what they announce on DePera, especially. Axford is a little more flexible. You could be a little more careful because he's only a non-roster invitee on a minor league deal, so you can get creative there. But DePera, I think there is reason for concern.
Yeah, and in all reality, the worst-case scenario for both of these guys for a long stretch of the season, obviously, it would be to just get them on the injured list to begin the season, let them get right, let them come in 15 days or whatever it is later, and then, let them run with it. I really don't think it's going to be too hard for them to come back from it. I think they would have been clearly putting the stop button on both of these guys quicker if there was something more eluding on. So, but as we mentioned a second ago, if they do hit the injured list, God, I still keep wanting to say disabled.
I know.
It's going to be tongue-tied with that all
injured
week.
List.
Injured list. They could just say injured reserve like any other sport.
yeah, baseball just has to be different than the rest of the sports, don't they?
Exactly. They just had to tweak it just enough. But yeah, as far as it goes, if either of them start on the injured list, I was thinking the idea here, there's all these guys that maybe should make the Toronto Blue Jays roster to start this season. And notably, I'm going to throw out Dalton Pompey for this part of the conversation. If you are all of a sudden going to be short what they thought they were going to be heavy on bullpen arms to start the season, do you take that step back and go, hey, you know what? Maybe we can eat this to let Dalton Pompey come up for the first part of the season and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure the plan would probably be, especially with their schedule, the way it starts the year, they don't have an off day until 2 weeks into the season when they go to Boston after the Cleveland series. So they're going to need as many bullpen arms as possible, so they probably would have opened up with 8 guys in the pen, but now with the shortage of guys, potentially, not ready for opening day into DePera and Axford, maybe they'd just be like, okay, let's just swallow it, go with 7 for the time being, see what we get with Dalton Pompey over the next little while, or maybe somebody else gets injured, God forbid, and we'll call back a reliever up. But yeah, no, it definitely opens the door a little bit more for Dalton Pompey, but also for some of those other non-roster invitees that we were discussing earlier, like a Danny Barnes or a Justin Schaefer, this guys like that who could crack this bullpen now if DePera and Axford aren't ready for opening day.
Yeah, the only thing I think on those guys is the fact that they are not already on the 40-man roster.
Yeah,
just like you where Dalton Pompey is literally sitting there. No moves have to be done, and I honestly, the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. But it's going to come down to what they think they need. And like I said, if you get him 5 days in the majors, is that better to get see what he does, or is it better off just cutting ties and letting it go? I will be very, very surprised after the spring that Dalton Pompey has had if some other team isn't just waiting to snipe him off the waiver wire.
Yeah. Well, I guess the one good thing about Axford not being on the roster is they were going to have to make room regardless. So now they can make room for Bud Norris. But yeah, no, it's going to be very interesting because they have so many different, more so with the Tapera potential injury and needing to put somebody on. This could put somebody on the 60-day DL that's already injured as well. So they're going to have to get creative to open up their 40-man spots somehow. So it sucks. It's going to have a ripple effect, not just in the bullpen, but across the entire roster.
Yeah. So speaking of fun stuff like the roster, who makes this team? There's a few questions still left as far as Sogard and Urania, the bullpen thing with Luciano being the other wild card in this whole equation. And, yeah, they got a new addition in Jason Adam, too. So there's some things there. As far as your utility guy, who are you leaning toward right now for your that extra infielder?
You know what? I think they'll, and this is another guy who they would have to make room for on the roster, but I would be leaning towards Eric Sogard, especially because he has played in the outfield before, and when they've had those four outfield alignments throughout the course of spring training, which is getting all the talking points on 30 for 30 with some of the guys from Monday when the Jays were featured there, and just all over social media, Sogard, when he's in the game, is the guy who goes out into the outfield and can be comfortable there, where, as I believe, on 30 for 30, Grichuk was saying when Urania was out there, he said, "Hey, man, you got to catch this for me," or something like that.
I think that actually was Gurriel that said it.
Yeah, that's it. It was Lourdes. It wasn't Urania. But I just think for the flexibility of being able to employ that four-man outfield, which it does seem like they're going to be using a little bit throughout the course of the regular season.
At this point in spring, that they're at least comprehending it.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, I'm fine with that, especially when you got some heavy power hitters who get the ball in the air a lot and into the outfield. It does make a lot of sense. But yeah, for that reason alone, I'd probably be going with Eric Sogard to be that guy who makes the team over Urania. Plus, they probably want Urania to get consistent at bats down in Buffalo. If Sogard flops, Urania's back up pretty quickly.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was leaning toward as far as things go, too, just because Urania is going to get everyday reps, and it's going to be a balancing act of where Urania actually fits in Buffalo, even, as far as that infield starting to round up. You got Telez at first. You're going to have Biggio probably at second, Bo obviously at short, and then the Vladman at third once he's healthy. So
exactly.
Urania is having those points now where he's going to have difficulty because the prospects have caught up to him, Brendan, to be on the same level with him, and a lot of the luster of the Richard Urania top prospect has faded.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Richard Urania anymore. I mean, he's had a bit of cup of coffee in the major leagues the last few years, and he's looked okay. Like in 2017, in 68 at bats, he only hit .206. But last year, he actually looked pretty competent at the plate. Not almost 100 at-bats when he got up here. Almost hit .300, a .340 OBP, so he took some walks. He's hit a home run in each of his year that he'd been up here. So there is a little something in that bat, but there's no real shine. He doesn't seem to do anything over the top to make him stand out and be like, wow, this kid needs to be on our roster. So
Two years ago, you thought the batting average was going to be that sticking out number.
Exactly.
He was batting like near .350 or something like that that one year in New Hampshire. It was insane.
Yeah. When he was, and funny enough, he was one of the better prospects in the system back then, and now everybody, as you mentioned, has caught back up to him. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. Maybe with this bullpen news and needing to create extra room on the 40-man, they lean to just keeping Urania up in the big league so that they don't have to either DFA somebody or put somebody on the 60-day DL to make room for Sogard.
Yeah, and that would be the one ding against Sogard, because in all reality, I think he's also one of those clubhouse guys, especially with these young guys. He's found a way to grind out at-bats and everything, just to even be in the majors in the first place. That's somebody that could show a lot to these young kids. So
yeah, 100%.
So, and then maybe I just want to see Wendy Peppercorn because he squints and things like that. So
I think everybody does.
So the only other one here that kind of snuck up on everybody, I think, was that Anthony Alvord got sent down to the minor leagues camp the other day. And I think a lot of people were expecting him kind of hang around until maybe this weekend. I think that's where some of it's getting sour with people. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I am a little bit surprised that they sent him down already, considering the spring that he's having. But I don't know, maybe just tell him, hey, you'll be probably the first guy up here if we need an extra guy on the roster. You've shown us a lot. Just go get ready in Buffalo, get ready for Buffalo. Get off to a good start, and you'll be up here rather quickly. The one thing that they were saying today, and I completely agree with what Kevin Barker had to say with Jeff Blair, and by the way, Baseball Central is coming back on the Jeff Blair show starting next Monday from 11 till 12. So it's super exciting. Don't have to hear all this hockey talk as much anymore.
But regardless, that's enough.
They were saying that, and we've said this throughout the course of the offseason, is that there's that one roadblock who still is there in center field, and Kevin Pillar. And especially now that offer's been sent down, the front office has been very happy with what they've seen with Teoscar Hernandez, both at the plate and in the field. So you have Billy McKinney there that kind of is a fourth outfielder but isn't going to see a whole lot of playing time. So Pillar just seems to be like that guy who just needs to move to open up another spot in the outfield for some more full playing time for a McKinney or an Anthony Alford. So who knows, man? Maybe Kevin Pillar won't be here much longer, and they'll open up that spot for Alford and McKinney to play more consistently at the bigs.
Yeah, between Pillar and Smoke, and I love both of them, so just the fact that we're even talking about this is one thing. I can see why everybody would think Kevin Pillar would definitely be the first one to go because of that roadblocking situation, and he has a solid player coming and nipping at his heels. It really would not shock me that if Anthony Alford was given an opportunity to run with a job, that he's going to just run away with it. He's got all the right tools, and this is the exact kind of guy you would want to build an outfield around. It's, and in all reality, it always shocked me that Kevin Pillar ended up becoming our center fielder. Think back to 2015, man. Dalton Pompey was the man in the minor league system. Kevin Pillar, I don't even recall him being on many of people's top prospects list. He was just that guy that was consistently doing his job throughout the Blue Jays minor league system. Mind you, batting around 300 most of those times, too. And we have failed to see that in the Blue Jay uniform. Insane defense, but even that's starting to round off a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? It's almost time for him to go, just to open up that spot. And you bring up Justin Smoke, too. I mean, I love Smoke. I wish he would be able to stay here a little bit longer with the next core, but even his time with Rowdy having the spring that he has and looking pretty good at the plate, if he gets off to a good start and Billy McKinney playing some first base, then there's another hole that you have to open up there as well. So, you know, the last three veterans really on this roster that were kind of holdovers from the playoff years and the one addition of Morales the offseason after the 2016 playoff run, Morales, Smoke, and Pillar would not surprise me if they're all gone by the trade deadline, or at least two-thirds of them. Morales may be the only one who sticks around just for his clubhouse leadership abilities. But, yeah, I don't know. It's, as we've said in a lot of our conversations, especially dating back to the middle of December and November when there wasn't a whole lot to talk about, it's almost time to give Anthony Alford those full-time big league reps, and to do that, you need to open up another spot in the outfield. And the only guy right now who would be moved to do that would be Kevin Pillar.
Yeah, it's one of those things that right now I think there is some benefit of Anthony Alford going to the minor leagues. He is still raw. This is a guy that was playing football not even 3 years ago. So it's one of those things I could see that they would want to send him to Buffalo and go, okay, this is your turn. You're going to run with it. You're going to be one of the guys in that Buffalo Bisons locker room. And which is saying something with what that locker room's starting to look like, Brendan. So let him run with that, see where he can do. And if he all of a sudden gets off to a tear and continues this trend like he's been doing this spring, he's going to force their hand. And it's going to be one of those things that has to happen at that point.
Yeah, he will. And you know what? You bring up the whole point of going down to the minors and having some stuff to work on. He absolutely does. That's what people have to keep in mind. When that whole conversation about Ryan Borucki and the uncertainty about his rotation spot coming up after Buchholz was added and Clayton Richard being all but certainly guaranteed a rotation spot even after Buchholz was added, Borucki has nothing else to learn down in AAA. We saw him pitch very well in 17 big starts. Sean Lee Foley, on the other hand, definitely has a lot more to learn. So you can say the same for Anthony Alford, too. He's not quite ready, much like Sean Reed Foley. They both have stuff to work on, but each of them at their respective positions, position players for Alford and pitchers for Sean Reed Foley, they'll both be one of the first from each group to be up here once the season gets going and they need some extra bodies on the roster.
Yeah, and that's exactly the best way of saying it. There's two ends of the spectrum there. There's no reason that one player needs to even think about AAA just because they have nothing they can possibly jump with at that point. It's like, okay, you set the bar this high, I'm already 10 feet above it. Where Alford is probably like right at that bar where he's got a few things that he's got to tweak, maybe work on his approach a little bit, but it's fine refining. You're not talking about a guy that isn't quote-unquote ready for the majors, I mean, or you're cementing him as a minor league player. This is a guy that will be playing Major League Baseball probably sooner rather than later.
Yeah. You know what? When he was up here for the first time in 2017, it was in early to mid-May, because I just remember that ringing double he hit in Milwaukee that year. So he, I wouldn't probably by beginning, maybe late May, we will see Anthony Alford up here, and hopefully it's for good, because they need somebody in that outfield to break out, which, by the way, on 30 for 30, Mark DeRosa and the crew was saying that that guy could also be Randall Grichuk. DeRosa was very high on Randall Grichuk the other day. So if that kind of comes together, then you got two-thirds of an outfield to fill in for a little while.
Yeah, that might have been one of my favorite interviews during the whole 30 for 30, just the fact that Randall Grichuk's a fun guy to be around, and then DeRosa and Scott Braun. That was a good interview.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he was like, so is this the year that Randall Grichuk finally breaks out? And he goes, I sure hope so.
Yeah, that was a good interview. I quite like that one, actually, especially the Grichuk being able to be so honest and upfront with that and have a little fun with that question.
Yeah, and as far as the rest of that interview goes, I figured we'd talk about this later, but him just completely personifying the new look Toronto Blue Jays as far as the new culture, I think, goes. And it seems like he's wearing that badge pretty well. And the exact quote for how Charlie Montoyo and him and the rest of everybody are all fitting into this new reformed reworking for the Toronto Blue Jays. On Charlie Montoyo, Randall Grichuk said, we're going to be different, we're going to have fun, we're going to go out there and match people's intensity. That's a pretty, you know, exciting quote from a player that hasn't been in this organization in long, but knew enough, obviously, with the Gibby and then going into the Montoyo spring. Things are different, man.
They are, and it is actually quite exciting. I mean, the last 2 years, it was all the veterans who were still here. They were making playoff runs, which is obviously very exciting, but those kind of in-between years when they were still deciding what to do, 2017 and 2018, when you look back at it, it was so pointless. They were just kind of stuck in yeah, it was just kind of, they're stuck in no man's land. 2017, I understand, because you're coming off two back-to-back ALCS appearances. Sure, you lost Encarnacion, but you still tried to replace him with Kendrys Morales and a few other veterans in hopes that, hey, if this team is healthy again, the pitching rotation should be good enough. We'll compete for a spot again. So I guess I'll give 2017 a pass. But 2018, when there were still veterans here, and Donaldson and Martin and Tulo and all those guys, just such a pointless year. And it just didn't seem like there was a whole bunch of energy around the ball club the last few years. It was all very laid back. Veterans were still doing their thing. So now it's just going to be such a breath of fresh air to see all these kids giving it their all, because they all need to start proving that they belong in the major leagues and for full-time roles. I mean, even though some of them have been told they have jobs, like Teoscar and Randall Grichuk, Billy McKinney, just going through the list here, even Brandon Drury, Danny Jansen, Ryan Barucki, all these young kids still need to go out there and prove. It's like, hey, we belong here. We don't want to go back down to the minor leagues. We're here for good. So they're going to have to go out there and compete. If they do that, then who knows, man? Maybe they will be able to catch some people by surprise.
Yeah, and that's exactly the kind of thing that Randall Grichuk was trying to preach here in that interview. The fact that this team is going to be fun and exciting regardless of what's going on. They're going to find a way to grind out wins, and I think that is the biggest cultural change that the Toronto Blue Jays needed that injection for. Over the past few years, you were just hitting the nail on the head, especially last season. Just kind of fell flat. It's like we were on life support. We're just kind of trickling along, you know?
Yeah.
So now this injection of the youth, You have a new upbeat manager, and this is nothing against John Gibbons. So please, fans, do not freak out. Something needed at this point. I love Gibby as much as anybody else, especially his little trot to the mound was one of my favorite things on the planet. But just the fact that I think that they're all buying in 100% to what Charlie Montoyo is preaching, and there is no reason they shouldn't be, Brendan. This is insane what this guy's bringing to the club, I think, as far as everybody's upbeat, everybody's in, and there's not really anybody being left behind. Everybody knows their place.
Did you tell that to David Paulino?
No, he was put back in his place, and I'm sure he is completely wide awake now. He might have
to be. That's right. Ken Giles took care of that instead of Charlie Montoyo. But no, I mean, the way they're going to play this year, even though fans hate bunting, and I'm not a big fan of bunting either. It's basically like giving the other team a free out, which it kind of is. But at the same time, a lot of the stuff that they're going to be doing, they're going to be stealing bases more because they're more athletic, they're younger, they're quicker and faster. They'll be looking to take the extra base as often as they can, whether it's trying to stretch a single into a double with some of their faster guys. The way they're going to be playing is keeping everybody on the base path, every pitcher on their feet at all times in the game. So you have to be 1,000% alert at every single time and get creative in terms of ways to score runs. The other thing that they were saying on 30 for 30 is that's what they're obviously going to have to do because it's not these big mashers anymore with Bautista and Edwin and Donaldson and Tulo and Colabello that carried the team in 2015. There's not that many power-hitting guys in the lineup anymore, so they're going to have to get creative with the way they score runs. And to do that, they're going to have to be on their toes and all bought in. And Montoyo seems to have done that perfectly this spring.
Yeah, everybody's all in. And I just couldn't believe watching some of these guys talking about Charlie Montoyo. And I think you even see it in his interviews. It's just, he reaps of this. It's just, come out and play. We're going to have a good time, and this is going to happen,
Yeah.
Wins are just going to come. And I'd be shocked if they play two games in a row exactly the same way. That's kind of almost what I'm getting out of this whole thing.
So. Yeah, it's going to be different, and it's going to be fun because it's not going to be the same wait for the long ball, which is great, and they still do have power hitters. Don't take what I said earlier away. They're still smoking and guys who can put the ball over the fence. But
it's not all the way through the lineup, though. It's sprinkled.
Exactly. Like before, you could go eight deep with guys who were legitimate 20 home run threats in like 2015 and even parts of 2016. But now, maybe a few. But yeah, no, it's going to be different ways to win whenever they do win every single time out. It's not just going to be how they did it in the past, which was truly relying on the home run. And it's going to be a lot less home runs and a lot more stealing bases and unfortunately bunting and moving runners over. So yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well there, Craig.
Yeah. I think if they were going to shoot for an offensive profile, this is power to the gaps baseball. Especially
Agreed.
In a ballpark like the Rogers Center. Let it hit the damn carpet and run, man.
Yeah, and they have guys who have really good extra base power for a lot of doubles. You've got Lourdes Gurriel, Danny Jansen will be able to do that. Drury, Freddie Galvis has a good amount of power. Teoscar, Randall, Billy McKinney seems like he's going to be a doubles machine. So, yeah, I think it's going to work really well. It's going to be a lot more stringing doubles and runs and hits together instead of clearing the bases with the home run, which, again, it's not a bad thing, but there's going to be a whole lot more, hopefully longer innings where they're piling on singles and doubles and triples and just keep on getting on pitchers.
You don't sit back and wait for the home run because it'll just come to you at this point.
Exactly. That's what they can't afford to do anymore like they did in 2015 and 2016.
That's what the downfall of 2017-2018 was. You were playing that same offense, and Donaldson was on the DL. Bautista wasn't himself. Edwin's gone.
That's very true. Very, very true. They played the same way when they didn't really have the roster to do so.
So, in the principle of this being basically pedal-to-the-metal baseball on offense for the Blue Jays, I don't think that this move... this personifies it perfectly. Randall Grichuk batting leadoff.
Yeah, that is interesting, especially considering he doesn't get on base a ton because he doesn't really walk. But at the same time, I don't mind it. It'll be interesting to see how it works for a little while. The perfect leadoff hitter, if he had time in my mind, is Billy McKinney. I think I've said that before, but the guy bats left-handed. He can take his bases, get on, lead the game off with a double. But Randall Grichuk could make it 1-0 really, really quickly. He's got that kind of power.
Yeah, and honestly, after I heard that move, Brendan, all I was thinking was like the 93 Blue Jays and how Lenny Dykstra just got on our nerves constantly. You had a guy like that that can just ignite a lineup, or a Brady Anderson, or any of those guys like that that just have plenty of legs underneath them. They're going to beat you one way or the other, but then all of a sudden they just uncork a freaking monster home run to start a game. That is going to light your team on fire and watch everything fall into place.
Yeah, from that perspective, I don't mind Grichuk in the leadoff spot, but it kind of goes against everything that you want in a leadoff hitter. Somebody who can work the count a little bit, not strike out very much, take his four balls and get on base that way, or whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see how long the Randall Grichuk experiment in the leadoff spot goes for, if he in fact opens up as a leadoff guy. It screams to me, just like 2016 when they tried Pilar in the leadoff spot. They just both don't fit that profile.
And we know that isn't going to happen anytime soon. In honest reality, I was surprised to see him in the sixth spot in today's lineup. but as far as leadoff players, hitters go, though, one that I thought was intriguing was Lourdes Gurriel Jr. If you're going to have him playing second base every day because now you got Freddie Galvis at short, he's a guy that's going to slap the ball all over the field. They're never going to know where he's going to line up or anything like that. So, yes, he doesn't walk a ton, but he's going to just spray foul balls, and he's going to find a way to put something in play.
Yeah, and I think if Gurriel still has a lot of learning to do as a hitter, like we said, he's got to take his walks, but he hits for a very high average consistently at other levels, so he should be able to get on base enough just by his batting average alone. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with Lourdes in that spot as well. I think he may have shown enough last year that he earned it. So I would not be surprised if Lourdes ends up there right after the Randall Grichuk experiment.
Yeah, because that would at least, in my opinion, drop Randall Grichuk down to number Grichuk two, maybe. And then have Teoscar, Smoke, and Kendrys Morales in your center piece of the lineup there. Probably Smoke back three because of the switch hitters.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the construction of the lineup. I mean, if you're going Grichuk, or my guess would be Grichuk and Gurriel probably are some combination of 1-2, and then you got Teoscar, Smoke, Morales, just as you said, and then the bottom part of the order, I'm assuming, would go something like, until Vlad gets up here, Brandon Drury, maybe go hit sixth. Danny Jansen 7, Galvis 8, and Pilar 9. That seems like it seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I like the idea of Pilar being 9 as the turnaround guy, because he's a lot better than any 9 hitter you're normally going to have there. So you're almost resetting the plate back up. And it might keep him a little more consistent through the season, too, because we know the story. Crushes it in the first part of the season, and then nothing the second.
Yeah, I hope we don't go through that same movie again. It's like, hey, maybe Kevin Pillar's actually figured it out this April, because he's actually doing some things better than last year in April when he got off to this great start. So maybe this is sustainable. It never is. It hasn't been the last 2 years. He's never shown the ability to keep a good start sustained. So I just want to see some level of consistency throughout the year, or as long as he's a Blue Jay this year. I also like Galvis in the 8th spot because, man, Freddie Galvis got a lot of power.
And he's going to play well in the AL East.
Exactly. You get it 20-25 bombs with that power he's got in a much better ballpark than San Diego.
Yeah. I just have to say this about the Kevin Pillar thing. Why am I thinking June is all I'm hearing is our friend Adam Corsera going, I told you! It just happens. It's how it is.
Yeah, sometimes the unexpected happens.
But I think there's going to be enough offense in this tank that people are going to be pleasantly surprised. I really don't think we are a 70-win team if everything clicks.
No, I don't either. If everything clicks, there's better health this year, especially in the rotation. They could push for 500. That wouldn't surprise me. I would say probably realistically, you're looking at maybe around 78, 79 wins, which is starting to push 500. But if they're relatively healthy, they're hitting, the prospects come up. Once Vlad gets here, Alford, a few other guys. Who knows, man? Maybe they will push for 500 or a few games above 500, which will get some excitement going for a full year of Vlad in 2020 and almost a full year of Bo. So maybe that window to start thinking legitimately about competing for a wild card spot begins as soon as next year.
Yeah. So before we dive into another Vlad talk, because it's going to happen here in a minute, everybody, just, you know, keep your pants on. So as far as all the fun goes, the for this season, obviously we're in a rebuild. There's plenty of things to look forward to, and all the Blue Jays fans know that. If you were setting the bar for your main goals for this season, is it to figure out what your 2020 lineup would look like, because you're going to eventually get all those pieces probably into play this year? Or where is your line at the moment, Brendan? Or is it based on wins?
No, it's not based on wins. It's right now, first and foremost, based on health for the veterans so that they can be flipped at the deadline or before the deadline for quality pieces. It would be Sanchez and Stroman. And who knows, maybe they will make a call on one of them to decide, hey, we want to keep this guy around for a little bit longer. Because, I mean, until Nate Pearson steps up and TJ Zoik and Pardino, who's still a ways off, and hey, they're shutting him down for a while with his elbow issues as well, that's cropped up over the last few days. But they may need to think about extending a Stroman there and Sanchez. But for the time being, one of them being healthy enough, pitching well, to be able to be flipped at the deadline for a considerable haul and keep on adding to this already talented pool of prospects. I mean, the same could go for Matt Shoemaker, especially with his year of control after this year. If Shoemaker is healthy and pitches well, he could be flipped. There still are quite a few flippable assets in here when you really look at it. I wouldn't be surprised if they're hoping for the same with Clay Buchholz. If he does something like what he did with Arizona last year, he could be flipped. David Phelps, once he comes back and is healthy, and he has that extra year of control as well. So there are a lot of guys who can still be had and add a lot of talent into this minor league pool. And maybe even some starters from other organizations who are much closer to the big leagues than what some of the guys currently have in the what the Blue Jays have currently in the minor leagues.
Yeah. So just to put the bow on what you just said there, basically you're even though the Blue Jays, and you and I have agreed on this, that the rebuild has been full on and they've done a really, really, really incredible job of gathering pieces up to this point, you're almost thinking continued rebuild 2.0 within the rebuild here and grab it even more talent in December.
Yeah.
It's insanely loaded, which is already the fifth best minor league system in all of baseball. You want this to be the number one minor league system in all of baseball by the end of this season is what I'm hearing.
I want them to have as much talent at all positions as possible, because when you think about it, with the amount of infielders that you have right now in the minor league system, especially up the middle at short and second, let's just say you have 10. If two of them are hits, then you got cornerstones around the infield for years to come, and that's considered a success. Anything more than two guys out of those 10 or eight guys is considered unreal. And with the amount of flexibility that they're preaching, you can plug them in at other spots around the diamond where you need guys to fill in. So keep on adding as much talent as possible so that the chances of getting it right and having hits on pitching, outfielders, infielders, catchers, everything is much higher than just having a few guys who could be studs if you're not relying on that one guy to break out, which they've done in the past and it hasn't worked out so well.
I will make the argument that at least the bar is set a lot higher in the minor league system right now than, because I honestly would not be shocked if Nate Pearson runs his way all the way to Buffalo this year, and even maybe a September call-up if they wanted to get playful. And I think a lot of that will depend on what goes on at the trade deadline and how open the 40-man roster is. But TJ Zoik, I honestly was very impressed watching him last year in New Hampshire. He's going to be in Buffalo this year. And
yeah.
I have not heard anybody talking about him this spring, and I'm honestly, it's been shocking. He's a guy that's is a very good pitcher.
Yeah, he's going to start in Buffalo, I'm assuming, or maybe at the very beginning in New Hampshire. But no, Zoik, first-round pick, I believe he was the first ever draft pick by the new regime of Shapiro and Ross Atkins.
I think you might be right with that. I'd have to really seriously do some digging to find that one.
yeah. So hey,
I believe it was 2016, though.
Yep. So, yeah, that would have been. That lines up when Shapiro and Atkins did take over here. So, Yeah, I mean, he pitched 120 innings in AA last year and pitched well. So maybe he starts there for maybe three or four starts and gets up to Buffalo quickly, or they just start him right there. Zoik, I bet we see here as a September call-up.
Yeah, makes sense because he's already going to be in Buffalo more than likely for a sizable chunk this season. So why not one more level if somebody got hurt or something? Or you just need to get somebody else to rake in some innings out of the bullpen because there was something funky going on. But we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting. And I guess that'll push me to my point on where the goals are lying in my opinion for the 2019 season. And by the way, I do agree with you. They're going to get a sizable haul, I think, come this exclusive trade deadline this year. But
yes, that's right.
So as far as my goals go, I want this to be shaken out. I want them to go out there, figure out how they can win with what they have right now, because it'll make that much easier for when the pieces come in for even next season. The free agent market's fairly impressive next season. I'm not saying they're going to run out and grab Justin Verlander at his age, but, you know, things like that. There's all sorts of good talent coming on that. They're going to make trades. They're going to get new pieces, and they're going to probably shoot for more major league-ready pieces if they know they can get a little bit of a win this season. If they're in that 70 to 80 win ballpark again with what they have, Brendan, it's going to be that much easier for them to want to go out and just go, okay, everybody gets a bunny. Well, you know, they're not going to get Mike Trout money, which we'll get to here in a minute. But this could be this team could take off really quickly if they get out the gate and do something this season. And from what we've been seeing with Charlie Montoyo's, you know, management style, hearing these guys like Grichuk talk, just seeing them play this spring with a hompodgery of all sorts of different lineups and looks and all these different players, plus seeing the new regime that is going to come from the minor leagues, the new crop here in the next, you know, could be month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. It's going to slowly trickle in, and this team's only going to get that much more impressive. So on top of what you said, by raking in new pieces at the trade deadline for those quote-unquote obsoleted pieces that don't fit for the future for the Toronto Blue Jays, you get the rest of that right this season. This team is going to take off in 2020, run all the way with it maybe in 2021, and be very, very impressive very quickly.
That would be fantastic. It's not so far away. And when you think about it, they only still, we said this before, they only have one guaranteed major league contract on the books for 2020, and that's Lourdes Gurriel. So they're going to have a ton of money. So if they figure it all out this year, they know who's going to be here in 2020 when Vlad is fully here and Bo Bichette is fully here. They're going to start making some flashier free agent signings as soon as the off season going into 2020. So plug and play, and hey, they could compete for a spot as soon as next year. So Blue Jays fans, be patient. This year will be better than last year. It will be more exciting. You'll see the kids. You'll be able to go down to the ballpark and identify guys you want to see here for the next 5 to 6 to 7 years. And just enjoy it. Baseball is almost back. And if you love it as much as we do, then no matter how bad they are, you're still going to tune in almost every day.
And it can be maybe more fun than Fortnite, or at least more fun than the players are going to have playing Fortnite.
That's right. No, so, Fortnite, what, 2 hours before the game or whatever the heck the policy is? Something like that.
The thing that struck me the most hilarious about that whole thing is I figured that was going to be something that was instituted by the front management. Apparently, that was something the players agreed on. And I think that speaks, you know, leaps and bounds to where the maturity level is in this young locker room. Because, they, you know, obviously it's the kids that want to play the freaking video games and stuff. I don't see Justin Smoke sitting down and wanting to play, you know, Wii.
Yeah. You know? Hey, very interesting that it was players who brought that up. Hey, it's good. It shows you that they are committed to being a good baseball team and not letting anything else distract them. Especially when you come out and hear that Carlos Santana with the Phillies last year broke a TV with the bat, because in September, when the Phillies were still in the playoff run, there was a lot of video game playing going on in the clubhouse during the game when they needed to win to try to push for the playoffs. So
that's
good. Great sign. Yeah, it is. It
I
is
can't even imagine. What do you say to your team if you're back playing freaking video games in the midst of a freaking ball game? It's the same as like having your cell phone out in a freaking court hearing or you know, anything like that to me or something. But it's just insane. I couldn't imagine doing that to my team and letting them down in that fashion. And I think that's what exactly the Blue Jays are like. This isn't going to be a problem. We're getting this out of the way now, and we can win this year because we're not distracted by this kind of stuff.
Exactly. No, it's perfect. I'm really glad that they've shown that they are mature and they're ready to not have anything distract them as they all continue to grow and progress.
Yeah. Mind you, this is a team that is averaged probably around, what, the 26, 28-year-old ballpark?
Yeah. I mean, you go through the roster, and there are so many guys born in the 90s, like right around 92, 93, 94. There's very few people who are born in 1990 or earlier, going back into the 80s. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it's not like we have an Ichiro or somebody that's throwing the offset. You know, the oldest player on the books right now, is it Clayton Richard or Kendrys Morales? Either of them, or I would think it would be.
I think it is. They're both born in 1983, Clayton Richard and Kendrys Morales, so they both would be
35.
Looks like it's Kendrys. Kendrys was
just
born in, yes, not by much. He was born in June of 83, where Clayton Richard was born in December of 83, so not by much.
Yeah, but either way, this is just think of that. 2 years ago, the average age in the ballpark was closer to mid-30s.
Yeah.
So now you're talking about completely going the other direction, and it's only going to get younger when Bo, Vlad, Biggio, and company come up.
I clicked on Clayton Richard's bio on BlueJays.com and just discovered that his nickname is Clay Clay. Interesting.
Oh, man. So that's going to be on his jersey on Players Weekend?
I hope so, because I just clicked on Ken Giles to see what his was, and it's 100 Miles Giles, so that's what was on his Players Weekend jersey last year. So,
all I'm picturing is a bunch of drunken $5 beard Blue Jays fans yelling out, "Yo, Clay Clay!"
Oh, God.
Well, he's warming up in the pen before the ball game.
He'd probably like it, too.
He's getting the nickname about it. He's like, "Hey, guys, what's up? Where's my beer?" Oh, wait, that was Roddy's guys that asked.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's going to be interesting, and I think that's the kind of fun that at least this team's going to have, even on their own, without us just goofing around with it. But
Clay Clay. Oh, man.
So, as far as some of the fun stuff goes for the minor leagues fun, in breaking news, the Blue Jays obviously threw this whole thing out, and they're the first team to do this, Brendan. I thought this was amazingly impressive, and I'm sorry we didn't talk about this in our pre-show prep, but it just dawned on me again that we hadn't talked about this yet. The Blue Jays are the first team in Major League Baseball to offer their minor league players a 50% pay raise, and this is more or less getting them to a normal living wage.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It is awesome to know that the Blue Jays are the first organization to do that. It makes me feel proud to be a Blue Jay fan. Especially when you hear all the horror stories about minor leaguers just barely getting by on what they were currently making and what 29 organizations are still paying their team. Baseball's a $1 billion industry, if not more than that. So they can afford it in organizations to play the minor leaguers at least a living wage to be able to eat comfortably, eat right, sleep right, do everything. So the fact that the Blue Jays have taken a step forward and done that already will help them retain players long term because they got started off better, and people will be excited to be drafted by the Blue Jays from now on because they know they're going to be treated right and paid well. So it's it does wonders for the game of baseball around and hopefully setting an example for other teams to follow, but also it's going to help the Blue Jays develop players a lot better too because they can be healthier with what they eat, sleep better, and just live more comfortably.
Yeah, and this is along with all the renovations they're doing in Dunedin, too, that it's going to be a full Blue Jays organization complex. This is going to be somewhere they can go to all year round and be like Blue Jays baseball mecca, you know, and now they're going to have the right money to be able to do that travel in the first place. They're going to be able to get the kind of treatment and development tools that they need, which was something else that we haven't talked about as far as how much technology has been around this team this spring. But it's insane that no team has done this. And just to put this in perspective, Brendan, I know you know this, but just for our fans that might not have heard these whole things, Major League Baseball does not have any reason to give minor league baseball players a full year salary, unless they're one of the team players that like Vlad, Bobichet, somebody like that has gotten a serious payday from their signing bonus. Regular everyday minor league players do not get paid full year round. Their wage, when you break out their salary for the season, doesn't really equate to a full year's worth of minimum wage here in the States. And it makes them live in eight people to two-bedroom apartments, and somebody's sleeping on an air mattress or in a tub, whatever it might be, just so that they can save a buck so that they don't have to worry about maybe flipping burgers in the off season.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. So... As we said, it is going to help them be able to live better, more comfortably. I think this is well overdue, and the fact that the team that we both cheer for and love did that first and took that first step to making change across the game of baseball makes me extra proud to be a Blue Jay fan. And Montoyo summed it up perfectly. He says he feels very proud to be a Blue Jay after he heard that announcement, that the minor leaguers. And coming from all people, Charlie Montoyo, who spent 18 years in the minor leagues. He knows
riding
that grind.
Riding buses and everything.
Yeah, like you're not even flying places. You're taking buses everywhere. You're not sleeping properly. So, no, it is absolutely fantastic, and I'm glad that they did that.
So, in other news, the Chicago White Sox have given another minor league player, their top prospect, Eloy Jimenez, a ginormous contract for somebody that has not stepped on Major League Baseball soil yet. So, as it goes, Eloy Jimenez, like I said, is the Chicago White Sox number one prospect, and they just dropped a sizable amount of money on him, Brendan. I'm trying to get the full dollar amount here, but it equates to as high as $80 million in incentives over 6 years, but it starts off as $42.5 million over those 6 years with two team options. Very friendly organization contract. But still, a lot of upfront money for somebody that could be, as far as White Sox greats go, this could be the next Jose Abreu as far as offensive power goes.
Yeah, it'd probably be better than Jose Abreu when he gets up here. He's going to be one of those generational type talents. He's right up there, Eloy Jimenez, with Vlad Jr. and Fernando Tatis Jr., all these guys who are coming up and making all the noise and headways through the minor leagues right now. So, yeah, I mean, the Phillies did something similar for a guy who never have made it to the major leagues yet in Scott Kingery just last year. Just bought out all of his arb years and got him on a major league contract. So
I just happened to, it's in the same article I was reading for the Eloy Jimenez. $24 million for 6 years for him. Doesn't have any incentives.
Exactly, for Scott Kingery. So he just did that, and it was unprecedented at the time. This is going to be, I think, become the new norm. When you got guys who are generational talents, just get them on major league contracts now. Get them making them money so that they can be developed better and brought along quicker. Just eat healthy, sleep right, all that stuff. But the White Sox know that they have this generational type talent on their roster, and they're not a financial powerhouse, the Chicago White Sox. So lock him up now when you can and just get it done. And this is already going to start the conversation is, hey, the Blue Jays should do this with Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
I think the Blue Jays, the only reason this, if this isn't happening behind closed doors, I would not be shocked at the moment, just because there's three main guys, well, at least two main guys that are going to be stepping through that door that fit this mold for the Blue Jays. And it's not just Vlad. So you got Bobichet nipping on his heels. And then you could even make the argument for, you know, some of the guys just down the line. But they're probably a couple more years down the ways on that. But you could lock up Danny Jansen.
you could do
that with Bobichet, Vladdy, those three guys. And you have a solid core to your starting nine day in and day out for, you know, a very reasonable rate. I'm not saying that, you know, obviously those guys will get different things. Vladdy being, I think, honestly, if you were going to have to pay Vladdy right now, he's looking at this Eloy Jimenez thing going, if you gave me that money, I'm not taking it.
Yeah, want more.
That's my point. Everybody's talking and comparing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as the next coming of baseball gods, basically. And then all the projections and everything point to that at this point, that everybody knows he's going to do everything that he is wanting to do in Major League Baseball, especially with his lumber.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, no, it'll be interesting to see how quickly, potentially, that they that they decide to do this. It wouldn't surprise me if, maybe not this year, this baseball season, but heading into next year, once he's firmly on the major league roster, with all that money that will be off the books after this year, and only that one Lourdes Gurriel contract that is 100% on the books, that they consider, and probably wouldn't be surprised if they do something like this for Vlad going into next offseason, just get him on a major league salary. And maybe even they'll do the same thing with Bo Bichette.
Yeah, I think they'd be silly to try not doing something like this with Vlad after this season. My thinking is, at least with any of these kind of contracts, and even doing something like this with the Eloy Jimenez model slash Scott Kingery model, they have so much money to play with for next offseason for the free agent market. I think you need to see where that shakes out before you can really start thinking about even committing money to these guys. You know, I'm not saying they're going to go land somebody like Bryce Harper, but...
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I think you summed it up perfectly there. You lock them up now to reasonable deals for guys who haven't really played in the major leagues before, but give them some good money, but you'll be ready for other free agents that are out in the market and save yourself some dollars down the road.
Yeah, you'll be able to pour your concrete for your next Mount Rushmore of Blue Jays, core next season between whatever free agents and whatever they do with these kind of deals with the youngsters. And I think that literally be what carries us for whatever the next 5-10 years is, somewhere in that ballpark. That's what you're kind of doing with these contracts, and why not?
Yeah, get them on the books now. Know how much money you have to go plug and play around the rest of the Major League roster when it comes to signing guys, and you're set. You're set to build a contender for the next 5 to 6 years, and you know your window.
Yeah, and just hope you don't overpay for Mike Trout and not build a team around him.
Philly Angels. Hey, they won't be able to start building a team before until Albert Pujols' contract is finally off the books. I feel so bad for the Angels.
Yeah, that's really where it's weighted.
Yeah, it 100% is. But, hey, that's their own fault.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. It's where these contracts have go. You pay somebody like Mike Trout because he's young and he's going to run with that contract. That's the reason he gets $430 million for 12 seasons.
What a lucky guy.
I know, right? Except he's got to play in Anaheim and live in L.A., but...
At least it's better than playing at Chavez Ravine at Dodger Stadium. You're not as in the traffic as those Dodgers are.
I've literally been in L.A. 3 times for work, and I was like, oh, cool, the Dodgers are in town. I was literally what, quote-unquote, was like 10 miles, so that's like, what, 20, 30 kilometers away? It took me 15 minutes to go a quarter of that distance.
Of course.
And by that time, the game was started, so I'm like, yep, turning around, going back to my freaking hotel room, as there's at least another hour and a half worth of traffic.
LA traffic is the absolute worst. Did that back in December and was not a fan.
Yeah, that's why you have Dr. Evil.
It's worse than Toronto! Yeah, it's somehow worse than Toronto. I mean, there's more people in LA than there is Toronto, but not by a crazy amount.
The public safety or the public transportation is just not there, man.
it's terrible. There's subway
in the States. We don't know how cabs and taxis and subways and all that kind of stuff work down here.
No, the subway system in LA sucks. That's part of the transit problems that they have, which is why everybody has to drive.
Mm-hmm. So it is what it is. But let's play a little fun game here, Brendan, before we wrap it up. One of our friends of a recent episode, Ryan DeFrancesca of Blue Jays Nation, last night on Twitter, him and I got into a rather goofy battle, and I figured it was worth continuing and putting out some of the highlights here. The question is, what would be the worst pairing of Blue Jays characters / ex-players to start a podcast with and title it? you mentioned a pretty funny one to kick us off with here, maybe before. Would you like me to start?
Yeah, you go for it, buddy.
So one of the ones I had that I sent back to him, and I'm sure it got a decent laugh, was David Wells, Jason Grilley, as the host of this pod. Call it The Grill with Boomer and Cheese.
There's some crazy ones that you could come up with some of the personalities this team has had the last few years and going way back to the 90s when they were good, and there was even more personalities in this clubhouse.
Yeah, one of the ones that Ryan came up with was the Flower Hour with Ted Lilly and guests.
I do kind of like that one, actually, the Flower Hour.
It's got a nice ring to it, right?
Yeah, I could kind of get down with that. I like that one.
Yeah, and other than that one breakout he had with John Gibbons, he was pretty mellow around, you know? He just kind of went out there and did his job. He had one with Vernon Wells called Whiskey and Wells. but more or less it came down to boiling down to me and him, and there was a few people that chimed in. Where's Greg Zahn and Jamie Campbell?
Oh God.
Things like that. Do you remember what you had before the show was?
I just want to see two polar opposite people. And I remember Strowman and Justin Smoke joking about their taste in music a few years ago. Justin Smoke is a big country fan, and Marcus Stroman is not. He's more rap and hip-hop and R&B. So just to get them on the show and see how completely polar opposites they are. Stroman's that fiery personality. He always wants to be on social media, talking to people, proving his ego. And Justin Smoke, as we said before we came on, when he was interviewed by Mark DeRosa, he just looked like he was either really, really high or just was not interested in talking to the media at all, and it's just no emotion or personality. So I believe we titled that one Fire and Smoke, or maybe it was Fire and Ice, something like that.
Smoke and Fire,
Smoke and Fire, that's it. Yeah, that's right. Fire being Marcus Stroman and his fiery personality, if you don't get it for some of those people, which I'm sure you do.
Hardy, har, har, yeah. Har.
Yeah, that would be mine. That was the one I could think of right off of bat.
I had two other ones that I thought would be kind of amusing. And the one that I think that it was probably not the best of the two, but it's still pretty amusing as far as base Blue Jay history goes. Pair Brett Lorre with Shea Hillenbrand and call it The Ship Is Sinking.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. That one would actually be pretty good.
First guest, Gibby.
Yeah. Get him in there. See how many fireworks are started with that podcast.
Yeah. And then my personal favorite that I, honestly, I'm baffled that I thought of this myself, Brendan. And I think it's just because I happened to be watching the 30 for 30 when I was doing this, and I saw Mark DeRosa the whole frickin' episode. And I love D-Ro. He's the man. I miss him. I wish he honestly was part of this new coaching staff, because I think he would fit this mold perfectly. Kawasaki, Munori Kawasaki, and DeRosa, and the pod is called I Think I'm Turning Japanese. So, just to, you know, that was the whole profiteering with and them two. It was the incident. He hits the home run. I'm Japanese!
Yeah, that year was quite interesting when the world got to know Munenori Kawasaki.
That was one of those years, and DeRosa actually said this, I believe, during the 30 for 30, or 30 Clubs, 30 Days thing, that he was amazed that they just all of a sudden hit the wall that season. He thought they had everything going right that season. Come on, this is a season that randomly Steve Delabar became like a closer almost, in a, you know, for a mediocre team that was running with it for most of the season.
Yeah, that 2013 team was one of the biggest disappointments in recent history for Toronto sports. Will always be the year that I'm just like, just what a happened? Big collective sigh.
Yep, and that's unfortunately how it goes, and that's why we play the game, but at least they, and worst case scenario, they made that fun, and that's where I think this team's season is going. These characters are going to be fun, and this is an insanely talented young ball club here, and it's only going to get better, man.
It is. Just be patient. Don't fret too much about the record in 2019. Just go out and have fun.
Drink your $5 beers and have your $3 hot dogs and just enjoy.
Or what about like your $2 milk carton? That's also available on that $5 or less.
For reals?
Yeah, they have milk cartons available on that thing. People have been joking about that. Nothing better than sitting in 30-degree weather on an afternoon game and drinking my carton of milk.
I'm picturing Ron Burgundy. Milk was a bad choice.
That's right.
I don't know which is more shocking in that conversation there, that milk is part of that menu, or I actually said for reals.
I think for the fact that you said for reals, honestly.
Oh, I can't tell there's women in my house. but anyway, Brendan, is there anything you would like to add to the pod or do your wonderful plug for Jay's Journal and yourself?
If anybody's taking the road trip to Cleveland in a few weeks, so give me a shout. One cool thing about that ballpark that since I was there, I saw a game in 2012 in Cleveland, so it was the opener that year. So before they did a bunch of renovations to Progressive Field, one thing that they have available is in the right field corner, right by the foul pole, they have basically kind of the equivalent to the flight deck with some tables where you can sit around and stand, standing room only. But for $15, you can stand in the standing room only place and the first beer is free. It comes with your ticket. So
Oh, nice.
Me and three friends are doing that. And if any Blue Jays fans are making the trip down there, give me a shout. And maybe we'll talk about ways which we can make Jay Bird watching and a Wednesday wallet more inclusive for some of our people to come on and join us.
Sounds like a pretty damn good time, man. You'll be the one wearing the Danny Jansen jersey with a Buffalo Bisons hat, I assume.
You better believe it, my friend. I actually did not think about the Buffalo Bisons hat to wear, but that is a fantastic idea.
Boom! Lawyered.
Yes, that's right. I definitely will do that now. The only other Blue Jay hat I have so far, and it's because it was on discount and saw it a few days ago for $20, I have a really cool one. It's the Players Weekend one, the baby blue one.
The recent one.
Yeah, from 2017. Not the most recent one from 2018, but the one the year before that. It was on severe discounts. I'm like, hey, this is a really cool Blue Jay hat, so I'm going to get it. So I have that one, too. But yeah, the Bisons one, I think you got me on that.
Yeah, I feel like I have that same Buffalo Bisons hat, but I have to give you the story here on my recent Blue Jays hat. So I bought the one I have that I just retired and sacrificially burned in 2017, and it got some paint on it from being around the house, and it got promoted to being a softball hat because of the paint and all this other crap, and I'm like, no, it's done, it's gone. I too many bad memories attached to that regular everyday Blue Jays on field hat, right? I brought my black, the regular everyday Blue Jay logo, but it's all like kind of like a blacked out like top, kind of almost like a kind of grayish black kind of mix. I brought that out of retirement. I bought it in 2015 in spring training with my dad when we were just there to see, you know, everything starting to get going, you know. We saw a couple games, had a few beers. I won an autographed ball with Casey Jansen's name on it, and that's the first thing I've ever won in my damn life.
The lucky
guy. Yeah. So in the midst of that, it has been just getting pelted over the years, and it looked like terrible, right? It looked like it had been literally thrown underneath the car while I was changing oil, or maybe even possibly got ran over. So I took it out of the closet. I washed it. I broke protocol. I washed it.
Uh-oh.
I figured,
it's not lucky anymore.
This is what I'm hoping, Brendan, is I washed the bad juju off of it from the last couple of years. It's back to being a fresh, clean hat again like it was at the beginning of 2015.
That would be quite something.
I will be gloating the hell out of that if they run away with it this year for some reason. I did that.
Yeah, you washed away the filth of the last few years and restored the good stuff from 2015.
I'm doing my best thing with like my best Pedro Serrano from Major League impression, and I'm praying to Jobu. Trying to wake up the bats.
That's right.
So anyway, Brendan, it's been another wonderful episode of the Wednesday Wallop, and I feel like we're really hitting our stride with this show. It's been getting more and more fun every week. We had some interesting guests over the past few weeks. I even might have a special guest for the next couple weeks here. I'll make sure I tell you after the show here, but there's all sorts of fun happening with the Wednesday Wallop. We got the morning mash going and the possible live shows here for us on Jaybird Watching, man. It's going to get more fun here as the season kicks off.
There's going to be more to talk about and more to complain about with that as well.
Mostly about how good the stupid Yankees and the Red Sox are doing.
Yeah, I think that's going to be pretty accurate for the entirety of the regular season.
Oh, frowny face. But it's going to be good here on Jaybird Watching, and we're here for you guys, the fans. If you want to talk, we are here. We've even done a couple of fan chats over the past year since we started kicking this thing off. Now that we're getting more popular, hopefully some more people hear that and actually want to call in or hit us up on Twitter and join this conversation with Brendan and I. It will be insanely fun to have somebody else to talk Blue Jays baseball with. So, until then, make sure you hit those subscribe buttons on iTunes, Google Play, so on and so forth, wherever you get your podcasting pleasures from. And make sure you follow Brendan and hit up his literary readings on jaysjournal.com, other than his shenanigans here on our show.
Yes. Give me some more hits on my pieces.
There you go. But you're making beer money here.
That's right. That's
right. Beer. Beer money.
Yes, I'll be your money at the KeyBank Center.
Yeah, there you go. Although, we could stand in line for 3 hours while we're trying to get our $5 beer this summer.
Then it could be beer money, not just I'll be your money.
Yeah, there you go, plural. So, good things, but we will make sure we keep you up to date and everything, and make sure you hit up on the morning mashes as well, and you'll be completely immersed in Toronto Blue Jays news, and we will have it all for you as it comes. So, thanks again, Brendan, and we'll talk next week.
You bet, my friend, and when we talk next week, it will be just a day or two before it all gets started.
And then we can have even more to talk about.
That's right. No more trying to stretch out topics like we did back in December and January.
It's a good thing we did the prospects when we did.
I know. That filled up a lot of our time and content. I think we nailed that one.
Not to note that for next season. So, anyways, Blue Jays fans, we'll talk to you soon. And until then, it's almost here. Let's go, Blue Jays.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.